Welcome in, Better's Last Stand, show number 90 from the Pine Room Studios, downtown Wheeling on a blistering hot day out there. 4th of July Eve. It is quite miserable outside. I would not recommend many people being out in it. I didn't hear as much about the heat this time around, but I wasn't here for the worst of the last one, so I'm not enjoying it at all. So hopefully you're in a nice air-conditioned area and things maybe cool down for the weekend. Let's hope for it. We got a big show today. Got lots of things going on. Got Sam in the final third of the program talking all things racing, and he'll touch on the Buccos and some other things going on. I'm sure he's got some opinions on Bronny James and some of the other things going on around. Maybe some Penguin thoughts. But let's recap how we did last week. We were up about 5 units total with our plays for the week. That's not counting anything we got pending. That's count golf, which it's a good thing we did, because we weren't very good in the other stuff. So it was a rough week, but we did pretty good in golf. Had 2 guys dancing around the win, Thompson and Rye. Just couldn't quite get what we needed to get from them at the very end. But that's very, very common when you're playing golf. It can be very, very strenuous and frustrating, and you got a guy that can't capitalize on the back nine, and it turns ugly. And Aaron Rye's been a guy that's really had problems with pressure. So some definite issues there, but we had Davis Thompson and Aaron Rye both tie for second. And, they were right there. They had every chance to knock off Cam Young, but couldn't get the job done late. I was 1-1 in Formula 1, 1-3 in NASCAR, AFL 5-4. Seems like it's like every week I'm just a game above 500, enough to scratch the juice out. CFL started that off last week for the first time, 2-2 on those plays. But nonetheless, it was some entertaining action, which we'll talk about later. 2-2 in my regular tennis plays, like just the match plays. So nothing great there. We did cash 3 tickets in soccer with a plus 525 margin there. So that was pretty good in the Euros. We will take that any time. And we have 27 live tickets on soccer, the European Championships, and Wimbledon going right now. So we'll recap those when we get to those specific sports. It's a tough week in racing, as I said, for Sam and I. So hopefully we'll bounce back. We had good racers. We had guys right there ready to win, but it's just absolute chaos at the end of that race in Nashville. 7 overtimes. It was 14 laps of overtime, a bunch of fuel issues because they were running so many pace laps, and just kept going on and on and on, and guys just kept getting knocked out, and it was Joey Logano was the last man standing. So not the way we wanted to turn out. We wanted it to turn out, but that's how it goes. Racing, golf, that kind of stuff, there's just little margin for error, and the guys who are ready to attack late and are going to get a little bit of good fortune are the ones that usually come out on top. So we will try again this week. Golf, again, wasn't too bad. We were right there. NASCAR, we lost a lot of great position spots from guys that we had in contention, and it was quite frustrating, but that's how it goes. NBA and NHL free agency starting up. We talked about NBA draft, Bronny James getting picked, which is just embarrassing, but I don't understand anything about that. I cannot believe a proud franchise like the Lakers would stoop to that, to where, and then they're all saying it was because he was good. Like they're drafting him because they have his talents. It's just absolutely a lie. JJ Redick's a liar. LeBron's always been a liar. Bronny lies. Management of the Lakers lie. I mean, this is ridiculous. The 4 better players on his own team from USC didn't even get picked in the draft. It's ridiculous. Just absolutely ridiculous. You know, I don't really care if they do it, because I don't care and I'm not going to watch, and if the Lakers want to waste a roster spot on, but don't lie about it. Just say he wanted, his dad wanted him. His dad's making threats to people to not take him, and like, come on. Let's call it how we see it here. It's like the liberal media out there. They tell you a lie enough times you'll believe it. So hopefully you're smarter than that, but a lot of people aren't. Anyway, NHL free agency. Penguins get a few upgrades of their roster to the bottom 6. The other Sebastian Aho, the defenseman from the Islanders, comes over. Matt Grizzlick, who's a pretty decent defenseman played for the Bruins. So pretty experienced guys, played on a good team for a while. So I like those 2 moves. And then Anthony Beauvillier is a winger. He's a guy that I've always really had high expectations for. I've always thought he was really, really talented, and it just never works for him. I thought he was pretty good for the Islanders for a while, and then he went out to Vancouver and didn't do anything, and bounced around to a couple other teams. But I think the guy's really talented. He'll give the bottom 6 a little bit of a lift, because he has top 6 skill and top 6 skating. So hopefully he can be a boost. They're talking about potentially Vladimir Tarasenko, who's probably more suited for a nursing home at this point, but he did just win a cup with Florida, and maybe he could be a partner for Malkin to get him going, fellow Russian. Maybe the power play could be boosted a little bit. He could probably still play a little bit on that. But interesting stuff going on there. We'll recap all that stuff as we get closer to those seasons. We don't have time to waste talking about it now. We got football and all that other stuff ahead of that. But NHL, NBA offseason heating up. It won't be long. We'll be talking about training camps from those two sports. John Deere Classic this week is just one of the worst tournaments ever. It's always terrible. It's in Illinois. It's just an awful field every single year, and it used to be I think directly the week before the British Open, or the Open Championship as it's technically called, but they moved it. I think it's 2 weeks before now, so they don't have to go right up against the Scottish Open. A lot of these players, that was the reason the field always sucked in the past, but I don't know why the reason is now. I think it's just this is just a hot, humid area that no one wants to go to this time of year. I don't have a whole lot of strong plays here. There's some guys that I thought were in contention. I mean, Sung Jae Im and Aaron Rye amongst the favorites. Jordan Spieth, Patrick Cantlay, 8-1. Not playing any of them. Sepp Straka, one of the favorites. Keith Mitchell, it's been okay. So I went a little bit off the beaten path here. You got to play some bombers here in this. When the best of the best aren't in this, you got to go with some guys that maybe could be a price. So I like Joel Damon a little bit, 134-1. So we'll use him. We'll use Denny McCarthy at around 30-1. Seamus Power, 72-1. Brendan Todd has played well at this course before. You can find him around 100-1, if you can believe that. Let's see, what other guys do we got here? Oh, Luke Clanton. He's another young guy, really talented young guy. Not well known at all. He's around 70-1. Davis Thompson, we'll go with him again. He's 30-1. We almost got him in last week. Couldn't quite get there. And then a couple of guys that I heard, Jeff Seely, who's a really good golf handicapper, gives stuff out on VSiN quite often. Troy Merritt and Patton Kizzire, those are two plays that he liked. Troy Merritt's 200-1. Patton Kizzire is 150-1. And then I actually liked Kelly Kraft, and I heard Jeff talk about him as well. So Kelly Kraft around 200-1, maybe top 20s for those guys. And then I played Maverick McNealy last week. He didn't do anything, so maybe he bounces back this week at around 28-30-1 range. So again, those plays are Seamus Power, Brendan Todd, Troy Merritt, Patton Kizzire, Kelly Kraft, Joel Damon, Maverick McNealy, Denny McCarthy, Davis Thompson, and Luke Clanton. I'm not playing any of the big favorites there. So John Deere Classic will sure to be bad, and let's just hope we can cash a ticket. Again, Cam Young wins last week, and we'll try to make the best of it. If we scratch out a winning ticket, that'll be good enough for us. On to baseball briefly here as we're getting down to it. I told you I was going to give you some post-All-Star break picks for divisions and playoffs and those kinds of things. I'm starting to get an idea of how I want to play these, so a couple more weeks and we'll have those for you ready to go. But this is an amazing stat. So the Pirates are off a rest advantage last night against the Cardinals, whereas they were on a day of rest where the Cardinals were not. The Pirates and the Blue Jays, two teams who are teetering on the brink. The Blue Jays have been pretty bad all year. The Pirates have been mostly bad all year. But maybe just a little bit more false hope with them, where the Blue Jays had higher expectations. But both of these teams are 0-10 off of situations this year where they have a rest advantage on their opponent. 0-10. It's incredible. So use that however you want to use it. Next time the Pirates have a day off and a team that they play are coming in off of another series, play that team. I mean, it seems to be working pretty well. Cardinals looked pretty good last night. Lots of runs in that game as Mitch Keller gets beat around. I know I am negative Pirate guy because I'll never believe in this team because I think Nutting's a liar. I think Sherrington's a liar, and I think that the clown media up in Pittsburgh, not all of them, but most of them, carry the water for them and lie and lie and lie and continue to try to make this seem better than it is. These people are stealing from you. If you go to these games, they're stealing from you. They're absolutely stealing. They put nothing back into that team at all, and it's disgraceful. And I don't believe that they're going to make moves, but all I'm hearing out there, every person I see out on the street is telling me the Pirates are making a move. I heard from this guy. I heard from that guy. I know this guy that knows a reporter. I know this guy that knows a guy that works at the TV station in Pittsburgh, and he told me the Pirates are making a move before the deadline. They're going to get a blockbuster deal that's going to blow everybody's socks off. I don't believe that. I really, truly do not believe it. And the Pirates, they're not a good team. Like, you – if you watch every night and you watch baseball every single night and you see the teams who are good, they are not one of them. They are, I can't even call them average. It's a stretch to get in. They're not average. They're 4 games below 500, so they're below average. And that's what they are, with a great pitcher, like an all-time great potential Paul Skeens. Jared Jones, he's just going to be in every, like an everyday number four eventually in on a team. Mitch Keller's always been a three or worse, in my opinion. He was never a number one. He's never been a number two. He had a couple of good outings. Everybody gets excited. But he's just not that good. He's simply not. You know, Paul Skeens is the real deal. He's as good as anybody that I've ever seen pitch in baseball in a long time. Since, like, Roger Clemens and Strasburg and, like, guys who were Randy Johnson. Like, he's that good. And I don't say those kinds of things very often. Will he hold up? Will it continue? Will he stay healthy? I don't know. But he's a once-in-a-generation kind of pitcher for the Pirates. I mean, they haven't had anybody like this ever since I've been alive. Garrett Cole's not even close to what this guy is. Not even close. And you see that now. But if you watch baseball every single night, you realize that the Pirates are not very good. And they have to have major upgrades if they're going to be good. And there's just not enough good players out there to get. And I just don't have any faith that they are going to get any of them. It just doesn't seem like it's going to come to fruition for me. But we shall see. I guess I can't completely dismiss it, but I find it very unlikely that they'll get any impactful players at the trade deadline. So tread lightly there. But 0-10 off rest advantages, the Pirates and the Blue Jays. Wow. Favorites 692 and 526 on the season in MLB. Unders on the season 614, 587. So that's crawling back up a little bit. So some overs are starting to come in a little. 49 with 614, 587, and 49. Top ROI. This is continues to be a story for us each week here. Orioles, no question about it. They're mispriced a lot. They're not. People don't know their pitching staff, and they're not that good. I mean, their pitching is a little iffy, but their lineup is tremendous. Their defense is tremendous. Plus 2010. For the Orioles, if you bet $100 on them, you are up $2,010 on the year. Cleveland Indians, or Guardians, if you want to call them that, but this stupid name, so we'll call them the Cleveland Indians. 1487 to the plus for them. The Yankees, 1159. That's drifting down. The Yankees were in the 20s a few weeks ago, but they have been terrible lately, and they're just not very good. But you heard that here first. I told people that back in May before I went on vacation, that I watched the Yankees. I watched all those games against the Orioles, but I watched the Yankees almost every single night for several innings at the least, and they're just not that good. They have two men on the team who are real players. The rest of their lineup are either has-beens or guys who are they want to be good that aren't going to be. They got a couple decent fill-in guys. Verdugo's all right, everyday player, but they just don't have it. And their pitching was going to eventually hit a wall back into the bullpen's already been a problem here for them lately. So Yankees plus 1159, that'll continue to drop. Nationals plus 741. Nats dropped a little bit as well. They were a little bit higher than this. They have not played that well lately. They had awful performances against the Mets the last two nights. Bullpen shenanigans. Again, you just can't have it. C.J. Abrams made a critical error the night before in a game they should have beat the Mets, absolutely. And then Milwaukee, who's played above their heads all season, plus 644, and they're already making some trades. So that's actually a good sign if you're a Brewers fan out there. So I got to give them credit. I haven't been a big Brewers backer by any means. In the past I have, but I didn't like them at all this year. But they've exceeded expectations. So can't knock on them. They're trying to make and beat the other teams to the punch here because there's not going to be that many available good players coming up here in a few weeks. All right, switching over to tennis now. Again, Wimbledon underway. We had some rain today, which didn't help things. Got a little bit of a delay, so things backed up here. You got people not being able to finish yesterday, not being able to finish or start some matches on time today. But we're trekking through it. We're getting through it somehow, and it'll take its course slowly but surely. So we have 16 tickets alive for Wimbledon that we gave out, futures that I put out last weekend. I didn't talk about it on the show last week because the draw wasn't out, and I couldn't really do a whole lot. I didn't know if Sabalenka was even going to play. I didn't know if Djokovic was going to play, and Sabalenka ends up pulling out. Andy Murray pulled out from the men's side. Djokovic played his first match and won 3-0. He looked okay. I'm not certain he's going to be able to hold up against some better quality opponents, but he did, go out there off of a knee surgery just a few weeks ago and looked pretty good. But when you're a modern marvel, a marvel of science like him, genetics, whatever you want to call it, how he takes care of himself, he bounced back pretty good. Okay, so we got some futures here for the women's. We have Siniakova to win quarter one. That's a 20-1 ticket. That one's still out here. You can find all these at BLS underscore PRP. If you're not sure the names or I'm going too fast, you can go and find them all on there. And if you want to get in on them now, wow, that ball, how's that ball out? I got it on right now. I don't know how this ball's out. It looked like on the shot tracer that it was on the line. And then Kalinskaya to win quarter two for the ladies at 11-1. And then I have the winner of the tournament to come from Q3 or Q4. Those are plus 250 and plus 350 respectively. Then Ons Jabeur to reach the quarters at plus 140. I think she's kind of getting slept on here. I think she's starting to round into form a little bit, so I like her to make at least a run to the quarters. I don't think she'll win, but I think she'll make a run to the finals in the quarters. Jeez, Gregor Dimitrov 8-1 for him. He's actually playing a match here, I believe, right now today. Tommy Paul we have to win. Dimitrov is to win quarter one at 8-1. Tommy Paul quarter two at 7-1. And Tommy Paul just had a really tough match against a young Finn kid today, and he was able to pull it out. Jack Draper to win quarter three at 4-1, and then Hubert Hurkacz to win quarter four at 3-1. He had a little test the other day, but played pretty well in the last three sets. Dimitrov and Hurkacz to make it to the quarters. Paul and Draper both to make it to the quarters, or to make it to the fourth round, sorry. And then I have four exactas that feature those players: Dimitrov, Hurkacz, Paul, and Draper against various other opponents on the other side. I think I matched a couple against Zverev, and then maybe Alcaraz, just because you expect probably one of those guys will make it out of there. If we can get a couple of these guys into at least the semis or the quarters, then you know it'll pay for everything that we invested so far, and then have some live tickets for the exacta where you can actually get some pretty good payoffs. So Wimbledon's quite enjoyable. If you wake up in the morning around 6 a.m. or whatever, when you're going to work, whatever time you get up, it's going to be on all day. It'll be on basically for 12, 14 hours throughout the entire day. So if you want some daytime action, that's where you get it. Tennis is what soccer usually is. Soccer off for a couple of days here, but we'll crank back up today when you're listening to this on a Friday. That's when we'll get going again. We would have had Copa last night. So Copa starts back up Thursday. Euro starts back up on Friday. We're going to talk about those two tournaments here after the break and go through a couple other things going on in the industry, maybe some bad beats, and then we'll get down to business with Sam in the third portion of the show. It's Better's Last Stand, show number 90, brought to you by our friends at the Brownie House. That's yesbrownies.com. Get on there right now. You can get 20% off of your order by using promo code PINEROOM. That's the Brownie House, and that is yesbrownies.com. They are the best brownies ever, and I am not just saying that. They're absolutely exceptional, and once you get them, you'll never want brownies from anywhere else. You'll never buy another thing of Betty Crocker or Duncan Hines. I don't even think Duncan Hines is a thing anymore, but any of those things that you would buy, you will never buy them again to make your own. You will buy these from the Brownie House. Get on over there right now, yesbrownies.com, and use the promo code PINEROOM for 20% off. We are happy to be partners with the Brownie House out of Morgantown, West Virginia. So you're helping out the local economy and the local business from down in the Morgantown area. All right, we're going to take a break here. Show number 90, It's Better's Last Stand. And we're going to come back and hit on some soccer, some CFL, a little Aussie rules football. We're going to mix in a little Big Three. We haven't talked about that yet, but we're going to get into that now. It's starting to get into that time of year where you get some other things under the radar. So Better's Last Stand, show number 90. Be back in a moment.
Reminder, this show is for informational and entertainment purposes only. All wagering activities should only be conducted by those 21 years of age or older and within the confines of federal, state, and local law. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem, contact 1-800-GAMBLER. That's 1-800-426-2537. All right, men, load the cannons and hold the line. You're listening to Better's Last Stand.
All right, welcome back in. Show number 90, Better's Last Stand, Pine Room Studios, downtown Wheeling. Lots going on here in the summer here as we head into 4th of July weekend. Be sure and hit up our buddies over at IC Cab if you need a ride over the holiday weekend, if you're out at a party or out at a bar or something, be sure and give them a call. 304-232-1313, I believe the number's correct. We haven't been in a sponsorship segment of their months are up now, and they haven't re-upped yet, so we're waiting. I'm sure they will at some point, but they so I haven't worked that into the show much lately, so I kind of forget the number. It used to be a daily thing, but anyway, thanks to everything that IC Cab did for us, and we've sure used them quite a bit across the Pine Room spectrum, all the Pine Room members and the friends of the Pine Room. So thanks to them, and then be sure and get on over there to yesbrownies.com. Get your Brownie House brownies today. They're outstanding, 20% off with the promo code Pine Room. Bad Beats talked about this a little bit briefly. The Nationals in the 10th inning the other night, they've been out, or two nights in a row against the Mets, they've been outscored 10-0, or maybe it's 10-2 or 10-3, but they've given up 10 runs in the Mets in the 10th inning the last two nights combined. So horrible, horrible bullpen for the Nationals. At least the guys they went to were the worst times. Dave Martinez is, I never really was sure about him anyway. But yeah, so pretty ugly there. Nationals grinding their gears a little bit right now. The Mets playing okay, but they're still fraud. So don't be buyers on the Mets unless they make some trades, which they're not going to do. Anyway, so Bad Beats there. If you had the Nats, the game's under. I mean, there's all kinds of ways you could have got beat there. Nationals in control of the games late both nights and below both of them. So that was a tough one. And then under in Holland, Romania yesterday, 1-0 Holland, or the Netherlands, or whatever you want to, they're locally known as Holland, but then the Netherlands to us. 1-0 in the 84th minute, and it ends 3-0 Netherlands. If you had under the 2.5 there, you're sick. You got a 90+4 goal there, which hurts, which is definitely a stinger. So Bad Beats all around. Baseball, soccer, probably as bad as you'll get. I mean, basketball, you'll have them here and there, but on a day-in, day-out basis, baseball and soccer, you're going to have some just gut-wrenching losses. Industry news, WNBA attendance continues to rise at these Indiana Fever games. I mean, this is just like a cultural phenomenon. It's like the Beatles, the Grateful Dead. It's incredible seeing Caitlin Clark. Like, she is filling these arenas. The people are staying around. They're just worshiping her. And it's really cool to see. And how gracious that she is after getting beat last night by Vegas. But just, you know, taking time for the Make-A-Wish kids and all these things, and she's, you know, got to keep a smile on her face. I mean, it's so hard, especially for a young person. You're pissed off, you win, but hey, that's part of being a professional. It's even different than college. Like, you are now a pro, and you got to handle yourself as a pro, and she's doing an absolute great job of it. And people wonder why that she is so popular, and everybody wants to make a big deal, like especially ESPN, who just won't give her due, even though they're fine capitalizing on the ratings from her games. But they never want to say that it's just her. They always want to include Angel Reese and some of the other ones, which Angel Reese is really good. And I was a WNBA fan before most people were. So I watched a lot of these games anyway, and I would still watch. But I'm not turning it on all the time. It's like appointment television when Caitlin Clark plays. It's just not that same thing. And Angel Reese, if she was a little bit more friendly and had a little bit more, I don't know what the word is, just it's a demeanor where she seemed like she was just more down to earth, I think it would help her a lot. But she plays with this edge and this chip, and that helps her basketball, but doesn't necessarily help her marketability. Doesn't necessarily help her marketability off the court. But, you know, again, a great player. But no one's watching these games for her. I'm sorry to break it to her. It's Caitlin Clark. She's packing these arenas. Angel Reese isn't anywhere to be seen. She plays Angel Reese 4 times a year. She's playing these other, every game she's at, everywhere she's going, it's 25,000 people and millions upon millions of people watching these games at home. Appointment television. I mean, I got local bars I go to Sunday afternoon, all guys in the bar, and not anybody in that place would turn. If I turn a WNBA on in the past, which I have, I get made fun of. Not now. It's, hey, turn it up. Like, the people want to watch it. Like years back, I'd have a game on there because I had a bet on it, and people, what the hell is this women's basketball going on? Now it's totally different. Oh, it's Caitlin's playing. All right, we're in. It's just like the media. These people lie. They just lie. Caitlin Clark is the draw. Sorry. So the rest of the people just got to deal with it. But going back to my point, she gets attention because she's a really good person off the floor, at least by all accounts. I mean, we don't know, none of us know her, but she handles herself in an incredibly respectful manner. And, you know, she had issues with tempers and stuff when she played in college, but she's growing out of them. She's young. I mean, people are going to make mistakes, and I don't fault anybody for that, but that's why people like this girl. It's not because she's white. It's not because, you know, there's some big underlying racial issue here. It's just stupid, but it's because she's a captivating player. She plays an exciting brand of basketball that people can understand. It's not a bully myself to the basket. Her basketball IQ is incredibly high. She's helping people learn about the game because she's a great passer. Her court vision's incredible. She'll probably make a tremendous coach someday. But that's why people want to get behind her. And I love the argument that everybody always talks about. In the minority community, they'll say, well, we want to cheer for someone that looks like us. And that's fine, whatever. But so the same would apply for young little white girls who right now, you know, there's the minority sport. Basketball is a very dominated minority sport, and that's rightfully so. They're the better players most of the time. But in this case, you have somebody that's on the same level there. So it's okay. Like, everybody can be good from all different facets. It's okay. And I know that's not popular, but that's the truth. You don't just have to decide who's good based on if they're lesbian, if they're black, if they're Asian, whatever. You can all, like, every single box can be checked for there's a good player that's this, there's a good player that's that. It's all encompassing. You're all in all good players. So we'll see what she does in the All-Star game. Her and Angel Reese will be on the team there. They'll probably beat the USA Olympic team, which would be pretty cool, actually, because they probably both could be on that team, if you ask me. But we'll see. That's enough about WNBA. I'm sure if bored people probably got mad about that, but that's okay. I don't really care. It is nice to see the handles going way, way up at the sports books for these games. Not just her games, too, because you get guys coming in parlaying them, but it's the her effect is directly leading to the massive numbers that we're seeing come in. So Bronny James on the other side of that, a reason that people would not watch. Bronny James, not very talented. His dad's an idiot. His dad's a liar. His dad's just a low character guy. But here's Bronny. He's going to be on the Lakers. So good luck. Books took a ton of money on him to go be drafted number one. It was like handing it out. He's called a St. Jude bet. That you should have just donated it to St. Jude's Children's Hospital because you're just wasting it. You're giving away money. He had no chance of going number one. Most teams didn't even look at him because he's just not worth it. He's not good enough. $13.9 million wagered on table tennis in Colorado in May. That's unbelievable, especially with all the things going on right now. It was more than golf, MMA, which includes UFC, and boxing combined. So that just shows you a different area of the country, different interest levels. Table tennis in Colorado is a huge thing. Started out there with the pandemic and has not looked back. So you got some avid table tennis watchers out there in Colorado, which is actually pretty cool. PA Gaming Control, listen to this one, announces a $100,000 fine against Stadium Resort LLC, the operators of Live Casino in Philadelphia, for taking sports wagers over the phone. And I can tell you how big of a no-no this is. 100K seems light. You're basically violating several different statutes within your state, within all your gaming regulatory boards, and even federal stuff where you got Wire Act issues as well. So you can't call in. This isn't the days of horse racing where you could still, I think you can still do that on some of the places. You can call ExpressBet, FanDuel Racing, or TVG as it was formerly. You used to be able to call in your bets. They have tellers over the phone that will take them. That's still legal. If you're in the state in which you're doing it, but not allowed to do that for sports betting. So PA Gaming Control slaps Stadium Resort LLC with a hefty fine there at Live Casino for taking bets. Hey, give me the Reds tonight. And like, I don't understand it because you don't have advanced account deposits, so there's no account to work off of. So basically, they're taking someone's word that they're going to come pay for this bet, at least from what I gather. So if that wasn't how it went, and I'm not certain, but I don't know how you, there was no deposit, like there's no balance you can take the bet out of. So there's no money up front, and you're just basically saying, hey, so-and-so will be in a few hours to get his bet. Like, yeah, that's a tricky one there, especially doing it over the phone. You just can't do it. New Jersey becomes the first state to approve car jitsu. Yeah, you're right. Car jitsu, as in jiu-jitsu. Yeah, so the martial arts of jiu-jitsu is car-jitsu, a sport where fighters contest a Brazilian jiu-jitsu match in the interior of a sedan or car. I saw a few videos of it. Absolutely absurd. I have no idea. I mean, I don't care if people do it. It's fine if you win a bet. But how the hell do you make lines on it? How do you know anything about it? It's crazy. I don't know how it's scored. I don't know. But I guess they have judges and people that can do it. So, car jitsu. Check it out. It's in New Jersey now and maybe coming to a state near you if you're lucky. I don't know what the handle will be like, but we'll see. Better at Bet Rivers wagered $790 on the Iowa Hawkeyes to win the college football playoff at 400-1. Ticket pays $316,000. Well, I guess you're getting 12 teams in, so maybe you have a shot, but it seems pretty unlikely that Iowa will be the team standing at the end, but we will see. Games are 15-2 to the over when umpire Andy Fletcher is behind the plate. These are MLB games, so write that down. Andy Fletcher, 15-2 to the over. His strike zone is obviously susceptible to hits, extra base hits, and walks. So keep that in mind next time you see Andy Fletcher behind the plate. All right, let's shift over. Soccer, Euros in action. We have four pretty good games, Friday and Saturday. You got Germany and Spain early on Friday, and then France and Portugal. And then on Saturday, you have Switzerland, England, and Turkey, and the Netherlands. We have several tickets alive, 11 of them already. We've cashed three. Netherlands and France at 25-1 and 16-1 to advance to the finals. France and England, 11-1 to make the final. As those two is like a finals exact, it doesn't matter who wins, as long as they both make it. And then we're pretty heavy on the Netherlands. The Netherlands had a nice win against Romania yesterday, and they're in a pretty good spot because they get Turkey, definitely the weakest team left, and it's setting up pretty good for us. So Netherlands 6-1 to make the final, 16-1 to win the final, which I don't think is impossible. Group D to win it all, France and the Netherlands. So you got two teams there, plus 250. These are all on BLS underscore PRP on X. If you haven't bet them yet, Cody Gakpo, hopefully you bet that one when I put it out. It was 35-1, maybe some 40s out there, which I saw after I bet the 35 to win the Golden Boot. He scored again yesterday. He's tied for the lead right now with three goals, and his team is in a very, very, very good position here against Turkey. Netherlands and Spain to make the final. Portugal and Netherlands to make the final. So those are 14-1 and 18-1. Netherlands to reach the semis, which if they win this match, they will. And then we have, that's plus 110, and then Spain to reach the semis at even money. So those are the soccer tickets that we have out there. As far as the matches go, I know everybody's on Germany here, but I think Spain has been pretty good. I think both teams to score in that match Friday might be a good one, but I lean Spain in a close one, but you could see penalties there. You could see a 1-1 in that one. France and Portugal, probably an under here. Both these teams have been pretty buttoned up on defense. France has really struggled to find scoring, and Ronaldo hasn't done anything yet for Portugal. They're probably better when he's not out there. But both teams playing France not playing their best. Portugal is pretty sharp, although both of them really, really fortunate to advance with just the lack of firepower that they had. So maybe an under two there. Small lean to Portugal maybe, as they seem to have a little bit more zip to him, but we'll see if Ronaldo can score a big one or Mbappe can score a big one. It'll probably come down to if one of those two guys scores, their team will probably win that match. Saturday's games, Switzerland, England, just a dead under here. If you can find 2.5s out there, I mean, I'd bet an in-play under. I'd bet pretty much any which way. England is so, so bad. It's an absolute gift. The Slovakian guy shanked the ball off of his foot in a 95th minute. It was literally about the last kick of the game, a terrible shank when all we need, he had under no duress, he could have blasted it out to midfield, and England would not have won that game. There's no chance. Anyway, he shanks it off of his foot. They end up getting a throw-in out of it, long throw-in, and boom, bicycle kick by Jude Bellingham, and again, all we got to hear about is stupid English people getting excited about it, and then they win in extra time, which is expected. But Slovakia just absolutely outplayed them the entire match. Switzerland's, you know, pretty technically savvy, so I think it's a low-scoring game, and the Swiss maybe just have enough to get by England there, hopefully. And then Turkey and the Netherlands will be on the Netherlands here. This could be the highest-scoring game of those quarterfinal matchups. Netherlands pushes tempo. Dumfries up the right side. I mean, they attack, and then they got guys who can play pretty football. So we'll go with the Netherlands and over in that one, and hopefully the Netherlands can keep pushing on, and we could cash a couple of those nice Euro tickets that we have out there right now. All right, moving on, we'll go to CFL, Canadian football. We went 2-2 in these last week. We have a game Thursday, which you won't matter, but I would have had it on Twitter. So BLS_PRP, you can find all those picks. So I was going to have Saskatchewan and over for Thursday night, so we'll see if that can come to anything. And then Friday, for the first game that you can get on here, you got Winnipeg. We were on them last week. They couldn't get the job done. We're going to go back to the well again. Winnipeg 0-4 taking on Ottawa at home. Ottawa was a winner for us last week on Sunday night. They get the job done on the last drive of the game. Winnipeg lays 3 at home, the total 47. We will go with the Blue Bombers and Zach Kolaris to break the 0-4 start to the season. We'll take the Bombers minus the 3. Saturday, the Calgary Stampeders and the Montreal Alouettes. Montreal at home in this matchup. They're 4-0. Calgary 2-1 on the season. It'll be Montreal minus 9.5. The total 50 even right now. Under on a 10-4 run in Montreal Alouettes game. So we're going to go under the 50 in this game. And a small lean to Calgary here. If I could get up to 10, I'd probably take Calgary. Nothing there yet for me. But if it goes to 10, I'll probably take a little nibble with Calgary. The Stampeders catching 10 on the road. But we'll go under 50 in Montreal and Calgary on Saturday. Sunday's game, BC and Hamilton. It'll be the Lions on the road at 3-1 against the 0-4 Tiger Cats, who let one get away the other night against our Ottawa Red Blacks, who we had. BC minus 5 on the road, the total 53. We will go with the Lions. I like them quite a bit here. Hamilton, not very good. BC playing good football right now. They have not been good for some time, but they're playing very, very well here to start the season. So we'll go with BC minus the 5 on the road at Hamilton on Sunday. So again, that is Winnipeg at home, minus 3 against Ottawa. And then we have Calgary and Montreal under 50 on Saturday. And then BC minus the 5 on the road on Sunday against Hamilton. That is your CFL action for the week here on Bettors Last Stand. Next one to talk about, Aussie Rules Football. We were above 500 again, so I can't complain too much about that. But I keep saying I'm due for one of these big breakout weeks where we hit like 7 or 8 of these bastards. So let's hope for it. Friday morning will be our first match. You may have missed this one, but it'll be Collingwood minus 9.5, total 167.5, as they are hosting Essendon. We're going to go with the Magpies here. They're 8-5-2 in the season. I like them laying the 9.5. I think they'll win this by at least two scores. Friday night, 11:45, first bounce on Eastern time, Gold Coast and North Melbourne do battle. Gold Coast minus 16.5, the total 170.5. I didn't really have a play on this game. I'd seesaw it around. I really don't. I want to play North Melbourne, but I can't take just 16. I need a little bit more than that. Gold Coast isn't any good. They've won a couple games recently, but it's just a fluke. I probably lean to the over, but I don't have a really, really strong play on that one. So I'll continue to read up on it, see who the lineups are, maybe change something or put something up on Twitter if I like anything. Port Adelaide hosts Western, 11:45. Also on Friday, it'll be Western minus 1.5 on the road. Port not a home dog very often. 166.5. The total will be going over the total here and definitely taking Port at home. I think they'll get the job done. I like them, probably play them a little bit on the money line as well. With them catching 1.5, it'll be a little better price. Hawthorn and Geelong, early morning on Saturday or late night Friday, depending on how you look at it. Hawthorn comes in winners of 8 games this year, which is stunning to me. And Geelong got back in the win column last week, the nice victory. They're 9-6. They're without a lot of guys, but they got the job done. Defense is a big problem for them, though. So we'll go over 170.5 in this game. The Hawks and the Cats over 170.5. Carlton in GWS early morning on Saturday, 5:30 a.m. It will be Carlton minus 5.5 on the road, total 163.5. GWS has lost 2 in a row. They've struggled. Carlton's won 4 straight, or maybe 5 straight. I think it's 5 straight. So they're playing pretty good right now. So we'll go over 163.5. Greater Western Sydney and Carlton. Richmond and Fremantle, 6:10 a.m. for this one. On Saturday morning, it'll be the Tigers coming in at 2-13 and Fremantle at 9-5-1. Fremantle lays 43.5 points in this game. Can't talk you off of that, but like I said last week, Richmond plays hard enough that they can cover these numbers. So we'll go under the 165.5. Richmond game did go over last week, which hurt us. But we're going to take a shot that they get it back a little tighter against the Dockers and keep that game under 165.5. West Coast and Melbourne, that's the Demons, 11 o'clock p.m. on Saturday night. Demons come in 32.5 point favorites at home, 165.5. The total will go under in the game, 165.5, and take the Demons to blow out the Eagles at minus 32.5. I think they'll probably win that by 40 or more. So if you can find those 40-plus ones, I'd recommend doing there. You get a better price. And then you got Sydney at St. Kilda. The Swans, the top team in the league. St. Kilda just not very good. It'll be the Swans minus 22.5 on the road at St. Kilda, total 161.5. Swans can score, so I can't recommend the under here, even though it's kind of low, but we'll go with the Swans minus 22.5. They are so far and away better than St. Kilda. I can't imagine St. Kilda keeping this under 30. Just because Sydney's just right now they're the best team in the league, and they're proving it week in, week out. So we'll go with the Swans minus 22.5 on the road. And then the final game, Adelaide, the Crows on the road at the Brisbane Lions. Lions minus 28.5, 167.5 on the total there. Brisbane's caught fire. We were worried about them early in the season. Now they've won four in a row. They're at home here. Going to go over the 167.5. Slight lean to Brisbane at home at 28.5. Crows are not very good. They've really struggled this year. So probably lean to Brisbane there. I could see a 40-plus win there. I didn't love it because Brisbane can get complacent a little bit late in these matches and take the foot off the throttle. But I'm sure you're going to hear Country Roads a few times if you tune in, and you'll hear Charlie Cameron pump a few through the uprights, and the Country Roads is his touchdown song, so to speak, if you're going to put it in terms of American football. So, all right, let's go through the plays again. It'll be Collingwood on Thursday minus the points, Port Adelaide plus the points or money line and over 166.5 against Western, Hawthorn and Geelong over 170.5, GWS and Carlton over 163.5, Richmond and Fremantle under 165.5, Melbourne minus the 32.5 against West Coast in that game under 165.5, and the Sydney Swans minus 22.5 over St. Kilda, Adelaide and Brisbane over 167.5 in the finale, and a slight lean to Brisbane there in the spread of 28. That'll do it for the AFL roundup here. We got a couple more minutes left, and then we're going to be talking racing, but we're going to go through Big Three. We haven't done anything with this yet. I liked it. I like this league a lot. I've liked it for a few years. I've really started to follow it closely last year, and I'm kind of interested in the games this year. So we're on week four right now. Wanted to let them get a little bit settled in, start to see who's who, which teams are coming together pretty well. I watched a little bit of this last week. So we got these games coming up here. The Three-Headed Monsters and the Trilogy. It'll be the Three-Headed Monsters minus 2.5, the total 92.5 there. Three-Headed Monsters on the season are 1-2, and the Trilogy are 0-3. Now, I have a play on this one. I'm going to take the Trilogy plus the 2.5 versus the Three-Headed Monsters in the over 92.5. Steven Jackson's the coach of the Trilogy. They've had some tight losses here, so I think they're playing better than their record indicates, and I would say that the Three-Headed Monsters are not quite as good as they seem to be, which is actually they only won one game, so not much difference there between those two teams. Tri-State and the Enemies. It'll be the Enemies minus 2.5, Tri-State, course, catching the 2.5, total 92.5. Also have a play on Tri-State here, plus 3.5 against the Enemies. Dr. J is the coach of Tri-State. I like Dr. J. I thought he did a good job coaching this team last year, so I think they'll be a team that will gradually get better as the season goes on. So we'll take Tri-State plus the points there against the Enemies. So we got two dogs to start us out. Then we got the Triplets and the Aliens, and the Aliens will be catching 3.5 from the Triplets, a total 91.5 here. I don't have any play on this one, so we'll pass on that one. The next one we have the Ball Hogs minus 2.5 against the Power, total 94.5 in this game. The Power come into the game with a 1-2 record, and the Ball Hogs are also 1-2. But I like Nancy Lieberman's coaching style here for the Power, so we're going to take another dog and take the Power plus 2.5 over the Ball Hogs with Nancy Lieberman leading them there. Three's Company and the Ghost Ballers. Good matchup here. Three's Company minus 2.5. The total 94.5. Ghost Ballers are 2-1. Three's Company also 2-1. No play on this one for me. I thought this was too tough to figure out there. And then Bivik, who I was really high on last year, and they didn't play very well, but they're starting to play pretty well this year. They're undefeated. They'll take on the Killer Threes. It'll be Bivik minus 3 or 4.5. Sorry, 93.5. The total there. We're going to go with the Killer Threes plus the 4.5, though. I'm going to take the other side there. I think they hang in just close enough, and I think it'll be a really good game. Bivik, coached by Gary Payton, which is tough, but I do think the Killer Threes will hang in this game, make it a 2-3-point game. So we'll go with four dogs here in the Big Three this week. And if you remember, the Enemies won the league last year, followed by preceded by back-to-back wins by the Trilogy in 21 and 20. Or 21 and 22, and then you had the Triplets in 19. There was no league in 2020. The Power, and then the Trilogy way back. So the Trilogy have won this three times, and we'll be backing them this week. The Enemies are the favorite right now to win it all. Them and Bivik are both 3-0. You can find them around 5-6-1. Three's Company around 7. Bivik around 7. Ghost Ball are 7. It's a little early to get anybody too excited about any of these teams. The Power at 12-1 interests me a tad, and Trilogy at 10-1. So we're going to go with the Trilogy plus the 2.5 and the over against the Three-Headed Monsters. And then we're going to go with the Killer Threes plus 4.5 and the over against Bivik. And then we're going to go with the Power plus 2.5 against the Ball Hogs. And then Tri-State plus 3.5 against the Enemies. So that'll be week 4 in the books for Big Three basketball. I believe they're in New Jersey, I think, this week. They were Baltimore last week, which actually want to go to one of these sometime. But yeah, New Jersey this week. I want to say maybe Newark. But yeah, lots of good action. If you want to check it out, I recommend it. I know it's hard to find time with you got soccer on, you got tennis now, you got all these great sports, all these lesser known sports, which they shouldn't be because they're better than the NFL and are way better than the NBA. And you know, I like baseball and I like hockey. They're still all right. But soccer has kind of taken a downturn with this VAR. I will admit that it has hurt the game immensely, but nonetheless we march on. It's still better than watching flags and stupid referees ruin the game every week, but we'll have plenty of time for that here in the coming days. College football, pro football right around the corner. Started working on some of my best bets for the NFL through the divisions, win totals, all those kinds of things. So we'll be releasing those out on the radio show and right here on Bettor's Last Dance, so you can tune in on the radio, watchdognetwork.com if you're out of the area, or AM 1600. If you're in the area, check it out, watchdognetwork.com. We're on Monday, Tuesday, and Friday. You'll hear all kinds of breakdowns from sports and all kinds of other things across the gamut of the world. So anyway, I'm going to take a break here. Bettor's Last Dance, show number 90 from the Pioneer Studio. Be back, talk racing, some baseball, a little free agency with Sam the Man from Upper St. Clair as we take you in to the 4th of July weekend. It's Bettor's Last Stand. We'll be back in a moment.
Reminder, this show is for informational and entertainment purposes only. All wagering activities should only be conducted by those 21 years of age or older and within the confines of federal, state, and local law. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem, contact 1-800-GAMBLER. That's 1-800-426-2537. All right, men, load the cannons and hold the line. You're listening to Bettor's Last Stand.
All right, welcome back in. Bettor's Last Stand, show number 90 from the Pine Room Studios in Wheeling. Join us now from parts unknown, or known as Upper St. Clair. It's Sam the Man. He had to make some things happen at work to shake free on this 4th of July Eve to join us today. Sam, thank you. It's always a pleasure to see you, my friend. Are you off work tomorrow?
I am. I'm off work. Until next, Monday, Matt.
Oh, so good.
I'm a free man.
Awesome. Four-day weekend of Bucko baseball. You got to be excited.
Yeah. Hey, I'm going to the game Saturday.
All right, good. Well, what's your recent record?
2-0 this year. 2-0 okay. This year, 0-5 last year.
Okay, all right.
Well, so, still under 500.
Nothing needs to give you season tickets because they need every win they can get right now.
God, are they in a fucking battle right now?
Yeah, we'll talk about them here in a couple minutes, but let's start with the open wheel boys here. As we had two races on the card last week, And once again, the F1 races are starting to get to where you can't just put it on cruise control anymore. It's now a potential to make some money. There's different guys that can win. As George Russell comes out of the woodwork, we were talking about him last week about how he hasn't been really showing up as well as we had hoped, and here he goes, shutting us up. He leads 8 laps and wins in Austria. What did you think?
I can't believe I'm saying this, Matt. I was saying it a couple weeks ago. F1 is boring. I can't believe it's so boring. Max drives around, dude. In like a span of a month, they have turned this thing around into a dogfight. And honestly, McLaren, Mercedes, all those big four are keeping me in tune to what's going on, and I love it. This British GP, Matt, it's going to be something good.
I really think it's
going to be good.
Hell yeah, because you got British drivers, which we'll talk about momentarily, one of which that won last week. But yeah, the McLaren and the Mercedes programs deserve most of the credit for making this happen. Ferrari had always kind of been right there, but they fucked themselves up, and it's really they have the equipment and the ability, but it's usually some sort of driver fiasco that does them in. But even they've been okay. And then you bring two other teams to the table here where you're having the two drivers from both teams. They're now outperforming Red Bull as a team, as a total unit, because you're getting nothing out of Sergio Perez in the recent weeks. He's about ready to head for the retirement community here. Is a seventh place finish out of him. I thought for sure when you had guys having issues up there, some of the top guys, you know, Lando Norris finished dead last in this race. Charles Leclerc finishes 11th. I thought for certain that I could cash that bet, Sergio Perez top six, and he still let me down.
I don't know what they saw or what they took away from giving him that extension, because I know that they want to fill the seat and have it a solid thing, but he hasn't done anything to get that 2-year extension. No. And now I don't know how these contracts work. I'm sure that they could call a lawyer and he's done, but it's just very odd that they made that move. And Matt, he's nowhere.
No.
He's nowhere to be seen right now.
I feel like he was racing better when he wasn't sure about his status. And now that he is, it's like he doesn't even care. I mean,
control,
he can't qualify. He can't. Nope. He can't do anything in a sprint race. He can't even contend. I mean, he's backing himself up to Lance Stroll level here. I mean, it's getting bad right now, and you're starting to see things like, I mean, I wrote some of these things down, some of these notes. I can't tell you the last time, and it's been the last couple of weeks you've been seeing it. Ferrari double top six is plus money. I mean, that was unthinkable the last like 2.5 years, and now it's plus money, and it's plus money for a reason, because it's unlikely to happen. Like it's because of him.
Isn't that crazy? It's just like, Matt, if the Ferraris or them in particular, if they have a good finish, it's almost a guarantee that there's going to be at least a DNF in one of those cars the next race.
Absolutely.
And they're going to be out of the top five in the next one. Like,
you can't
run any momentum off of what the Ferraris do, because they just always seem to shoot themselves right in the foot.
They do. And Charles Leclerc will probably, since he had a bad outing last week, he'll probably be on the podium this week. Because, they can't possibly do, back-to-back weeks of anything for them is tricky. Coming into this race, Max, of course, is the returning champion, but you had three Brits finish in the top five. You had George in fifth last year. You had Lewis in third and Lando in second. And wouldn't you agree that all three of those guys right now have better cars than they had last year?
Absolutely. And they all have way more momentum than Max has. Max is the one that, I can't believe I'm saying this, he's digging himself out of the hole.
Right.
You know, that's why I'm so excited. It's like, oh, they're really going after Max. I think that Lando Max tussle was kind of a nice little visual of like, oh, if you go at this guy, he'll either make the mistake or he'll do something to cause an issue. And then it's like, George Russell was not supposed to win that race.
No, he wasn't.
There's no chance he was supposed to win that race.
And Verstappen has no backup help now. He has
none.
Team. So they're
none.
Going 2-on-1 against him all the time, and they can gang up on him. And I remember Fernando Alonso, when he had his little run last year, when he was up in contention, for podiums and things, and he said a couple times in interviews that he was going to go so aggressively on the first lap at Verstappen because he thought that was the only chance. He said anybody can be vulnerable if you're putting pressure on him. But the problem is once we go half a lap, he blows us away and we can't catch up. So we only have like one chance at this thing. So now you're seeing the cars actually being able to get close enough to him throughout the race in different times. And they are. They're being aggressive. And to his defense, he hasn't had to defend a lot of that in recent years either.
No.
So it's new to him. And now you're kind of, you don't want to say you're in his head because the guy seems incredibly calm. His heart rate probably didn't even increase during that. Mine did, but
his
didn't.
Mine did.
But yeah, so now Max is definitely up against it. He's minus 170, which is a playable number, but it, you know, it's not as easy as it once was. As you got Lewis now around 16-1. George coming off a win around 15-1, Lando around the 3-1 range, Oscar now in the 12-13-1 range. I don't know what to think here. I mean, qualifying is going to have a lot to do with who ends up on top here, wouldn't you say, Sam? And then does Ferrari bounce back as we talked about earlier?
I think the two with the most momentum are both McLarens. I should say Mercedes also, but in particular Lewis Hamilton.
Yeah, I agree.
I think that is the finish that he needed. To just, I don't know, reassure is the word, to just remind himself that he is a 7-time champion. He's very good.
Yeah.
I mean, he was driving awesome, but I just think that the momentum is with the two, you know, the Mercedes team, the McLaren team, and I think Max is really going to have a hard time at this race, Matt. I really do.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Carlos Sainz won this race 2 years ago, so, I mean, There's another factor there if the Ferraris get their act together. I mean, Max could be trying to fend off three different teams with two adequate drivers, whereas Sergio Perez would be eighth or worse probably at the time, giving him no relief, not even being able to compete in this race. I hope I'm wrong, but it doesn't seem like it. I'll try to look for anybody outside of these top teams to be able to be contender, but it's really not. I mean, you may be able to find somebody in the top 10. Now, I did find it interesting, and I want to see what you think. I thought this was an interesting bet because they have run decent here in the past, the Williams team, and I looked at Williams, the double top 10 at 50-1.
I know,
I don't know if I could pull the trigger on it, but it was a little tempting.
The thing that fucks me up with that is I know that Sargeant finished right outside of the top 10 last year, and that's like his best finish ever.
Yeah.
Ever. And it's like, man, if he
he can't.
It's not, Matt. It's not possible. I can't.
Just because of him,
Because of him, you're right. It's not even these other drivers. It's just him, man.
Yeah, he's.
Like, P11 is your best finish.
How about of all the teams, McLaren, Red Bull, which Red Bull is probably at the worst odds of these four. Out of the four big teams, Mercedes, Red Bull, McLaren, Ferrari. Who are you most confident in of a double top six performance?
McLaren's.
Easily, okay.
The McLaren's. Right. I was going to say the thing that worries me with Max is that when everyone's coming at him, you'll have George coming at him, you'll have Lewis coming at him, you'll have Lando, and you'll have Oscar.
Right.
So that's 4v1. In the McLaren's, they seem to have figured out how to keep both of the cars up there, not just have Lando up there and Oscar around like 5, 6, 7. It's like, no, Oscar's in the top five. And he's gunning for those top three.
I said last week, and I still think that we're spot on here, that Piastri is continuing to get better. So, like, he's improving pretty quickly. And I mean, he's very inexperienced still. And, I mean, I see good things out of him. Because, you know, sometimes you get that really good car and you can't handle it or whatever, and you're losing spots. But he isn't. And he's being aggressive. He's passing people. Like, so I see a lot of good things there, and I agree with you. I think the McLarens are pretty strong. I'm curious to see. Like you mentioned it earlier, George Russell really fortunate to win that race. Does he build off of that? Does he say, "Wow, I was really lucky. I haven't been that good." Or like, how does he approach it? And now he's coming in. He's got to contend with Lando, who had a bad finish. He's going to be pissed. This is his home race. And then he got Lewis, who's going to be the town hero there. Everybody's going to want him to win. Who doesn't want Lando to win? So George is kind of the forgotten about Brit in this race, coming off of a win. How do you think he handles this?
I see him outside of the top five.
Yeah,
I really do. I just think that something with George, like he shouldn't have won the race.
No,
take it for what it is. You did win, but you know, if they don't crash. You're P3, which is good. I don't think he has the skills to be better than Lando. I really don't. I think the two McLaren drivers are better than George, just period.
I agree
with what car they're in.
No, I agree. If you say Lando and Lewis offset each other, I agree that Piastri's by far going to be better than Russell. He's already pretty much better than him now, and he has far less experience. So, all right, so let's go down to it. Are you going to go with McLaren to win the race?
Matt, I am. I wrote Lando wins.
Okay.
I know, and I think there is going to be a Red Bull in the top three, but then I put a Ferrari at P3. So I think maybe Max will be P2, but I think Lando's going to win. I just think that they have finally dialed in something to keep their car in the top three, and they can really start to poke away at the little things that don't keep them out of the P1. I'm excited, man. I haven't been this excited for an F1 race, I swear, in years.
Yeah, I know, and it makes it even better now that this you got three Brits tracking down the guy who's on top. Like, it's crazy. But yeah, no, this is good for the sport. It's good to see. I'm excited about it as well. Any underdog guys, anybody you think could crack into the top 10? I thought maybe Fernando Alonso, but he's been so bad this year. I can't really get behind him. Maybe Sergio Perez is the long shot guy.
I was going to say maybe my guy, Alexander Albon.
Yeah.
He's my only hope at Williams. I love him.
Yeah.
They're running a cool little British livery I saw, so take that for what it is, but that's my only hope. It's not going to be Botas. It's not going to be
We got to get Sargent out of this circuit here fast, cuz he's sinking. He can't even contend.
I think he's done. I think he's pretty much sealed the deal.
Yeah, I mean, he has to be. I don't know how you maintain or retain a guy like that, but I don't know. We'll see. All right, let's move on. Stay on the open wheels. They were off last week, the Indy cars, and then this week we're going over to Mid-Ohio. Alex Palou won Laguna Seca out west. The last time we saw these guys out here, he was an impressive performer. Palou won this race last year, led 48 laps, pretty much dominated it. Scott McLaughlin led 45 the year before that and pretty much dominated. So you've had two different teams, Ganassi and Penske, dominating at this race. Do you see there being another contender, or is this as simple as pretty much going to be a Roger Penske or potentially a Ganassi win this weekend?
I had Dixon as my winner, but my sleeper pick is definitely Christian Lundgaard.
Okay, I liked him too. Yep, absolutely.
I really like the way he's been driving. He's quiet, but like we always say every week, Matt, you have so many people to possibly pick a winner from in IndyCar that it is way, way harder to decide which one of these guys, because a lot of these guys, like even Armstrong, I like Award, but Dixon.
How does Alexander Rossi perform now with uncertainty around him?
What does I don't even think that Rossi's been running bad.
No, he hasn't. He hasn't
and
at all.
It's like, yeah, you're sacked, buddy. We're gonna take the other guy. It's like, dude, these guys just change drivers like they change socks.
They do.
They really do.
It's very odd. I don't know what guys are looking for or how this all works, but geez, yeah, I was very surprised when you texted me that. I'm like, whoa, didn't see that one coming. But I mean, and again, like you say, he hasn't really underperformed. I mean, he's not been Arenas VK where he's just been DNFing or no-showing. He's not Stingray Robb. I mean, give the guy a break here. Or even Marcus Ericsson, who's been an incredible disappointment since changing teams.
Terrible. Terrible disappointment.
Any other dark horses, anybody that you thought maybe? I don't know. I thought maybe Colton Herta, but I don't know.
Matt, I know exactly what you're thinking with Colton Herta. Everything goes wrong for Colton Herta. He gets a lead, he crashes. He is like Kyle Busch right now.
Yeah, you're right about that. I thought Will Power was sneaky in here too. He's ran T3s here the last two times. Won a race this year, so the pressure's kind of off him. So I liked him and Christian Lundgaard as my two guys this week.
Yeah, I love that. And honestly, if you're ever uncertain, if you go with a Penske or a Ganassi, you got a shot.
Yeah.
If you're not really sure, one of those two teams, you're gonna get pretty close.
And honestly, for people out there, if you're new to this, look for those cars and look for the one with the best price and see what you can get. You can check the qualify and see where they qualify. But these guys have such good race speed, it really doesn't even matter. As long as they're not stuck way, way back at a track that's hard to pass on, I mean, they're all going to be pretty fast and very comparable. So comes down a lot of times to just which driver likes that track or how the car's set up for them and how suitable it is. So should be a good one there at Mid-Ohio. All right, so let's get over to the stock cars now. So last week's race was just littered with frustration for us. We had guys dancing around the lead the whole time with a chance to win it for us, cashing some tickets. And once again, we've had this several times. We have overtime. We have shenanigans in the last few laps. And this was as bad as you've ever seen. I mean, for the action, for the person who just likes the action, it had action. I'll give you that. But it wasn't good in a sense that we ran way too many caution laps on these overtimes. Guys are running out of gas and getting close to running out of gas, and good cars are having to pit. And then you got Kyle Larson all of a sudden having all kinds of weird things going on with him where he's involved in these accidents. It's like very uncommon for him. But yeah, and Joey Logano comes out, a guy that we've backed here for how many weeks, and he can't get the job done. Then the week that we don't have him, he comes through, Sam.
So many things happened in this race that I was just mind blown. When they did that one restart, was that the worst restart you've ever seen?
I literally told Chris and my brother, I wasn't even sure in fast motion that they actually crossed the start-finish line before those cars wrecked. I didn't even know. And they barely did. There was only like two cars that passed it, and everyone else hadn't even got the green flag yet, and there was a wreck. It wasn't Daytona, for God's sakes.
I know. It was almost like everybody was like, okay, we're going to go on three, and then some people went on go, and then everybody was all fucked up. And it was like, no, this is terrible.
And now I'm drawing a blank on who is in the top lane in the one – and he couldn't get going and got hit in the ass by two guys.
I think it was Kyle Busch.
Yeah, it was, yeah. Because he couldn't get going. And then we were, like, yelling it, like, oh, so-and-so rammed him. And it's like, no, it wasn't their fault. The two cars behind him, they had nowhere else to go or they were going to get hit. So, yeah, it was whoever that was is, like, could not get into the throttle right, and then that caused an accident. But, yeah, it was way, way too drawn out there. I thought there was a lot of good cars that just didn't have a chance. I mean, it was. Nope. I thought Ross Chastain had a great car. Obviously, Chris Bell had a great car. Denny Hamlin had a great car. Kyle Busch had a really good car. Brad Keselowski, your pick, had a great car. Like, there was guys around there that had all kinds of opportunities. Chase Elliott was competitive. And then, boom, here we go. Wreck after wreck after wreck after wreck. I had Tyler Reddick. He almost pulled it out there, but he got shuffled so far back in some of those. So he had to make up a lot of ground. He made a nice try at the end, but couldn't get there. And then in the end, Logano and Zane Smith with the big top two showing there. Ryan Preece, you get some guys up there you didn't expect. Bubba, who was having a rough day, ends up getting the top seven out of the ordeal.
Yeah, it's like even like a Hemric and a Gragson and
yeah,
dude, it's just you don't see those names at the end of the race, and when you do, you know something fucked up.
Or happened, you're
honestly
at a super speedway and everybody else crashed. Right, you would not expect this at mile 0.33 Nashville with not a high degree of banking in So anyway, it was an action-packed race. It was frustrating for us because we had guys right there in contention. But I tell you what, we're on to something with the RFK boys are strong. Like, they are strong. Buescher was good. Keselowski was good. I mean, these guys are knocking on the door. And you know what? Very, very comparable. Joey Logano, George Russell. Probably not even close to the best cars out there, but they survived, so you got to give them credit in that regard. But I'm not sure that I'm going to say they're going to take a ton of momentum into the next race.
No, and I would say not, but I can't believe Logano snuck that one in.
I know.
I cannot believe it.
And we didn't have him. We've been playing him all year at good prices. And it's like, yeah, and his price really wasn't even that great last week, but still, good enough. Would have been a nice winner to cash. But nonetheless, action-packed race, had a little bit of everything. Frustrating at the end with all the crashes and the issues on the restarts. But now we go to a totally different animal here. Our second trip to the Chicago Street Race, downtown Chicago, right along the coast of Lake Michigan, right along the shoreline there. Exceptionally exciting race last year. You had a lot of catastrophes, guys going off the tracks into the barrels and craziness. And Shane Van Gisbergen gets the job done. He only led 9 laps in the race, but it didn't matter. Justin Haley was incredibly strong. I thought he was going to win for us. I think we had him that day. He led 23 laps. Chris Bell led 37. All right, where do you go from here? Van Gisbergen's going to be getting gunned for here. His price is pretty low. I'm probably going to have to pass on him because he's not going to sneak up on everybody like he did last year. First of all, let me ask you this. Do you think that with the data available and the fact that these guys have been on this track now one time, do you think we'll see less of the mishaps that we did last year?
I definitely think less mishaps and more confidence with those drivers, but Van Gisbergen for 10-plus years drove circuits just like this.
Right.
He won multiple championships. I don't think he's going to – it'll probably make him drive better if these guys are really gunning at him. Because, dude, he dominated them on this track last year.
Yeah.
But I do think that there are several names that can contend. I don't think he's going to easily run away with it at all.
I agree. I think he's a very good top five bet. I imagine he's going to be in contention. If he does win, I will not be surprised. But I think you're going to have some of these other guys with a little bit of experience under their belts now, and they're going to be ready. So one of those guys, I would say, Kyle Larson had a good car here last year. Probably had the top driver rating, if I recall. Tyler Reddick was very competitive, and then he had an issue and finished 28th. Chris Bell was competitive, had an issue, finished 18th. Those are the guys who were at the shortest prices, all around $6. Van Gisbergen in that group as well. So that's Bell, Van Gisbergen, Reddick, and Larson amongst your favorites. Any of those guys, you mentioned you talked about Shane already, but Larson, Reddick, or Bell, do you like any of those, or they're too short of a price for you to take a shot with them?
Out of all of them, I would take Reddick.
Right.
Out of all of them, I just think he's a very, very good driver. I like him the most. But, Matt, I can't even believe I'm going to say this. There's a one person's number that sticks out to me the most, and I think this is either going to go one way or the other.
All right.
Kyle Busch's number sticks out like
33 to 1. All right.
He has been struggling so much these last two seasons, but these last couple weeks, Matt, he's been up in the front.
Right, he's had good cars,
and he's a good road course racer.
Fifth year last year.
He just has like a little bit of space where he's not, somebody's not right next to him.
Right.
I think that, you know, like in a truck series race, when they race on these circuits, he dominates.
Yes, absolutely does.
Dominates. He's a guaranteed win. I just think that Kyle Busch, that number sticks out to me more than anybody's number.
Well,
but he unfortunately is not my winner, but he's my underdog winner.
No, I agree, and I like that pick because this track is kind of an equalizer, because if you have the good road racing experience, the street race type stuff, and he does, and he's not going to be scared by anybody. This is when your oval program has not been running as well as you wanted, or even if it has and you haven't had the luck, it's nice to get a track like this that's up for grabs, because it's only the second time that these guys have been on it. And you can use your valuable, years of experience. So 33, 35, whatever you can find him at, I agree. I think it's definitely worth a shot. And I don't see why he couldn't win this race. As a matter of fact, it would not surprise me that much. My pick for the race is going to be Chase Elliott. I found him around 9 to 1. I thought he ran pretty well here last year, stayed out of trouble, just kind of, you know, bided his time, got a nice third place finish. So I think he'll be stronger. I think he'll know the course a little bit better. And then let me ask you about these two guys. I'm expecting two big performances, and I almost pulled the trigger on one of these guys as my top pick, but I went with Chase just because I feel safe with him. Ty Gibbs, Chris Buescher. I like both of them a lot this week.
Dude, you must have been in here when I was doing my notes. Ty Gibbs is my winner.
All right, good.
But Buescher was going to be my other pick just based off of how much momentum they've had and what we've been talking about. But, yeah, I think Ty Gibbs gets it done. I think he gets the first victory under the belt.
No, I couldn't agree more. I expect both of those guys to be strong contenders. I love everything about Gibbs here. And, again, the advantage that all these guys are with the same experience level on this track, so that helps him. He's not going to get out-dueled by a veteran who's had a lot of laps on this track. It's just not going to happen. So Van Gisbergen, obviously a rightful co-favorite in this race. Larson, exceptional driver, all those other names that we talked about there. Busch has the back class for sure. But here comes Gibbs with he had a good car again last week. He's got to stay out of the issues. And I think he's a top contender, and I love that as your top pick, because I teetered. I was like, man, I really want to pick him on top at around 17, 18 to 1, but I'm going to go with Chase. But, yeah, no, I love the pick. How about a couple other guys? Justin Haley ran great here last year, obviously. He's ran well in road courses this year and in past years. I mean, I don't see why he couldn't be a top 10. And then how about Austin Cindric? Always a good street-type road race guy.
Yeah, Cindric and were my two that stand out. Or don't be surprised if either of those guys sneak into the top 10 to finish this race out easily. I love the Suarez. I think Suarez is going to do pretty well on this track.
Yeah, I do too. And I tell you what, Daniel Suarez does really, really well on tracks where they're heavy shifting tracks. He's really good at that. I mean, he's exceptional. Anybody else stick out to you? Okay, let me ask you this. Like, he's on his way to retiring right now, Martin Truex. He's usually a good road racer. He's around 14-1. I mean, would it surprise you if he was in the mix?
No, because he's got nothing to lose. Right. You know, it's official. Somebody else is taking your car. This is it. Why not just run it into the ground?
Yeah, right.
Honestly. If they give you a good car, I mean, run that thing into the ground, man.
Yeah, no, I agree. Ryan Blaney, 35. I don't know. Logano probably can't bounce back. Michael McDowell was interesting. He finished 7th last year. Usually a good road racer. He could maybe be. And then Allmendinger, of course.
Haley's number is crazy. If you had a couple bucks and you sprinkled it on Haley and he won, man.
Yeah, absolutely.
Sitting pretty.
Yeah, and how about like Brad Keselowski, who's never been a great road racer, but he's a monster price. Denny Hamlin. How many weeks do we not talk about Denny Hamlin? The 33-1 here. He's right up there with Kyle Busch there. But I mean, you can never rule him out. I mean, Denny's starting to get pissed off probably because he's had some bad luck the last few weeks. So
which means
he could be banging guys out of the way. And he finished 11th here last year. So maybe, but should be an exciting race. I'm looking forward to it quite a bit. 4:30 on Sunday. Should be a good racing weekend, Sam, as you got 4 days off. That's going to be exciting.
There's one thing I want to preface.
Okay, please.
It cannot fucking rain like it did last time and they cut the race short until it's dark. I want the full race.
No, I know. We got to pray for
Please
that.
Please work with me.
We got to hope for that. All right, so Pirates, you'll be up there on Saturday.
Yeah, buddy.
Thoughts about last night? And then, let me ask you this, too, because it's starting to really piss me off. And I know if it's pissing me off, it's pissing you off. So are they going to continue to put out the very worst lineup possible every time Skeens pitches? Is that like just the facto thing you got to do? You don't need any runs because he's so good, we just won't put anybody that can hit?
I cannot stress this enough. Derek Shelton has to be fired today.
He does.
Like, if any – I would like to see a total of how many games Derek Shelton has cost the Pittsburgh Pirates this year and the year before, because he's never – 2 games in a row had the same lineup ever. It's an impossibility. It's just like O'Neill Cruz should never sit. Nick Gonzalez should never sit.
No.
Sawinski. Okay, this is my thing that really bothers me. The Marlins DFA'd Tim Anderson, and he's batting 205.
Yeah.
205. The Pirates have at least two players in their lineup almost every game that are in like the 170s.
Yeah.
And we play him because we think, oh, we gotta get him back rolling again. We gotta get Triolo back rolling again. No, we don't.
No.
We need to get some bats here before we're in fourth place and we're 10 games out of, you know, under 500 again.
Yeah, and you're teetering on the brink here now. The Reds, who have not played very well, last night, if you saw any of that game against the Yankees, they had a little momentum swing for them that could carry them. Elly De La Cruz in that game last night was like stole the entire spotlight in New York and. I mean, I could see them starting to maybe get on a roll. Cardinals are the Cardinals. Cubs have kind of come back down. Milwaukee's not going anywhere. So the Pirates, they got to leap a lot of teams here, and they're not doing anything, and they're squandering these. When Skeens pitches, they got to win.
It's they have to win. If he can only give up, if he only gives up one run, and you can't score two.
Yeah.
I mean, Matt. What do you do? What do you do? Yeah. Where do you go?
I don't know.
And they keep saying, Charrington keeps saying, you got to get better organically. We're not worried about the trades and this and that. Dude, we're out of it. We're going to be out of it before you know it. And it's just going to be hell. And yeah. I can't lie. I can't wait because I love it all. I love all the drama, but I'm sick of it. I really am. I'm getting tired of it.
I mean, if you listen to the media, and I know you do, you listen to a lot of talk radio around there. I mean, everybody's saying they're going to make moves. Like, and I just don't. I'm just not certain that they're going to be able to.
I don't see it, man. Other teams have more money.
Right.
You know what I mean? They
and
have
more
money.
And more willing to deal prospects and eat salary of guys that maybe get them off somebody's books to benefit yourself in another regard. But Pirates aren't going to do that. That's where they're at a disadvantage. But they better move quick because you already got teams out here making moves. Milwaukee just added an arm. I mean, You're going to see Kansas City's going to be going all in here soon. I mean, you're going to have – and I know Baltimore. Baltimore's got the prospects that they can match up with anybody. So if they want to get that Crochet guy from the White Sox or something, they're going to get him. Like, they can. But Pirates, they can't piss around here. They need to – did you hear a thing – it was started to take off around here about the Pirates were going to be buyers and they were going to buy and they were going to still move Chapman.
Yeah.
Which – how do you feel about that?
I don't think they need to move. They need Chapman.
I agree. A lot of people say no, that they can move Holderman into that role. But I think you need a 7th, 8th, and 9th ability. And especially with Bednar, you know, not certain of what his status is going to be in down the road.
I would keep Chapman. I mean, the prospects are the people I'd get rid of.
Right.
If you say you want to get better organically and then trade him away, well, that's – you're not even following your own philosophy there.
Right.
I just like – like, Henry Davis can go. He can go. It's
word
done.
Is he is. Sounds like he's probably going to get moved from what I heard. But what will they get back? I mean, who wants him? Talk about the Marlins.
I mean, Matt, to think that they drafted a catcher and he started his career in right field.
Yeah. And the Pirates, they deserve they're the ones that turned him into what he is. We have no idea how he would have turned out if he'd played his real position.
Seriously, it's the – shocking thing that there's only one honest outlier, and it's the owner in Charrington and Shelton. It's those three. It's all the people that
the triumvirate, the holy trinity of hell for Pirate fans.
You said it right, Matt.
Yeah. All right. So this weekend, how do you feel about your who's pitching? Do you know the matchup yet? I didn't even.
Do not know, but I know this. It's Bucco Luau weekend, so I get a nice little freaking shirt on Saturday. I'll wear it the rest of my life. I will. I'm serious. The shirt is sweet.
Well, that's good.
They're gonna win, Matt, because I'm going.
Well, yeah. So your record on the season is really good. It's better than their record. I'm trying to see if it's got. Looks
probably
like
Falter. They'll probably Falter. Get a Falter start.
Yeah, you got Falter again, and then Peterson for the Mets. It looks like David Peterson, who actually pitched good the other night against Washington. But you never know. So when Skeens is going Friday night, free shirt Friday, hot dog night. Oh boy, against Severino. Oh man. All right. So what do you think? Do they get the ship righted here against the Cardinals? And then,
I don't even know what that means because
you're right.
Like when you write the ship, where does that leave us?
I guess just not capsized, but
right? Like is that 500? Is that a
couple
games
above?
I don't even know.
Yeah, I don't really know either.
We haven't been winners for so long that I'm not even sure when you write the ship what that means.
No, you're right.
I'm so used to losing that I don't know what that means, man.
And you got the Mets coming in. They're actually playing okay.
They're not good
at all. But the Pirates, for a long, long time when I was young, and your dad would remember this, the Pirates could never fucking beat the Mets on the road. It was like, I don't know how many times they went up to New York. I mean, this is a home series. But it was like every time they went to New York, they'd get swept. And it was like the Mets could be playing the worst baseball, their last place in the National League East, and the Pirates come to town, and the Mets catch fire just because of that. Maybe the Pirates can turn the tables this time, but
I hope.
Yeah,
I don't have too much hope, but I do hope.
Yeah, it's getting down to the end here. This next few weeks, it's just you're not seeing any difference here. It's not there's nothing coming to life that's making this team play better.
No, there's no offense. There's no life. But how'd you like that thing I sent you about the hit streak? What was your favorite? Which hit was your favorite?
I mean, I can't believe that someone puts that out there. Like, how about let's try to win some games?
Matt, that is why I'm like, I cheer for this team. Holy shit. That's like a loser post right there.
It totally is. And then that's what a lot of these pro sports franchises have become that. Just the teams that never win, they got to try to find small victories. And that's just a sign of a loser right there. But now, your favorite hit of Brian Reynolds. Oh, boy. How about one that wins a game here against the Cardinals? Let's go for that. All right, so before we let you run, Penguins, you asked me about Dubas. What the hell is he doing? I'm not going to go too critical on the guy yet. I'll just be honest with you. I told you, I didn't think this guy was anything special when they got him from Toronto. I didn't understand the excitement because he had Toronto and he didn't do anything. Like, they're okay. But, like, yeah, anybody could have Austin Matthews and have a pretty good team. They never won in the playoffs. He never addressed the goaltending, which he's – I don't – I think the Jari situation last summer was a huge mistake that they're paying for because no one wants the guy now. I don't know. I'm not totally upset about the guys that they added for their core and the bottom six stuff, but I don't think there's going to be a whole lot of difference from this year's team to the next year's. What about you?
No, I agree with you 100%. And it's like when I texted you that Nashville signed everybody.
Yeah.
I mean, there were a lot of names out there, not big, you know, star names, but there were a lot of names where, like, those are the type of players that the Penguins are missing.
Right.
And they didn't sign any of them.
Yeah.
They didn't sign one. And, like, you keep seeing these guys that are getting these, you know, annual salaries of $775 and
right.
$1.2 million, which, yeah, that's great, but those aren't the type of players we're looking for, unfortunately.
Yeah, it's weird because they kept those core guys, the nostalgia guys, Letang and Malkin especially. I mean, Crosby was going to say, and Letang was fine last year. He's still pretty good. Don't get me wrong. But they wanted to do that route to bring in Carlson. And you know, you got to hope that there's going to be a bump a second year, that a lot of these guys are going to bump back up and play. Well, obviously, Crosby was good, but Dubas looks like he's trying to stockpile picks and just get, like, the roster rounded out with as cheap as possible to just try to get through to down the road. And, I mean, it's just weird because the ownership group went the other direction where they kept all the veterans, the old veterans, and now the general manager's kind of in a tough spot because he can't move any of them. At least they got rid of Riley Smith, but he's kind of stuck. He can only do so much. I thought Beauvillier was an all right pickup. He'll be a good bottom six guy because he can skate and he's pretty talented. And then I thought Matt Grizzlick from who played for Boston, he played a lot of big minutes in playoff games, so he's all right. I mean, I don't think they got any worse. I actually think they cut a little bit of fat off their roster, but I'm still worried about the goaltending. Jari's just not a guy that can be playing all the time. He's just a loser.
Yeah. No, you said it. I mean, I have much more faith in Ned than I do Jari.
Yeah.
But I mean, if Crosby's not going to score 40 goals again this year, then I don't know how they even contend. I have no clue how they even get close.
The only thing we can hope for, Sam, is that maybe, you know, Reardon's gone now. They brought in Sully's boy to run the power play. Maybe the power play clicks next year. I don't see it because the guys are stubborn. But you got to think Erik Karlsson's going to have somewhat of a better year than he did last year. It's hard not to. And if they could have scored, like, 6 or 7 more power play goals last season, they probably would have made the playoffs. It would have taken.
No, you're right. And, like, they have some players I do like. Like, I think Bunting is great. I love his
big upgrade there.
I just think he's going to have a year like he had last year. Like, you have to be that
right.
good all year.
In the whole year.
He's got to beat Crosby all right. year. And we know Malkin's not going to be Malkin all right. year. So then our issues start there, the turnovers, penalties,
Maybe Bunting will help with Malkin all year because he did pick up his play when he played on his line, and they're talking about bringing in the other Russian, Tarasenko, who's about finished, but he's Malkin's boy, and maybe he brings, and he just won a cup, so maybe he has, like, one more decent year at a cheap, you know, ticket. They keep him. Malkin gets a little bit more optimistic, and they pick it up. Maybe Ryan Graves would be a little better this year instead of the slowest skater in the NHL.
That's a contract they can't get rid of.
Yeah, and Raquel, I mean, he was a disaster. I mean, my God. But I don't know. I'm not hopeful that they can be much better, but I still think they probably would have an outside shot at the playoffs is about the best they could do. Maybe just right on the fringe like last year.
Yeah, they squeak in, and if not, this is Sully's goodbye.
Yeah. Well, how about this? We'll end this with your goodbye. Bronny James, give us your analysis of this, and I'm sure you're going to agree with me and say, this didn't have anything to do with his dad. He was just a good player that the Lakers wanted, like everybody's saying.
Right.
What do you think of this fiasco?
I actually, for him, I feel bad.
I do, too. I do, too.
He didn't start any of this. His, you know, I get it. You want to do things with your son, and I can't even imagine being LeBron James. I can't even fathom, you know what I mean? But just, like, he just wanted to play with his son. Like, there are players that average double digits that did not get drafted. I mean, Hinson from Pitt.
Yeah.
He was a okay shooter. He didn't get drafted.
And three guys on Bronny's own college team that were better stats than him.
So, I really hope that, for Bronny's sake, I hope he plays and does okay just to for him. I don't want him, because, like, it's not like he was like, pick me, I want to play with my dad. It was my dad being like, oh, my son's going to. He's going to play with me.
But why not just sign him to a free agent deal and not
I know,
waste a spot from somebody?
Well, they were saying Bronny wanted to hear his name picked, you know? There's no fucking way J.J. Redick wanted to draft Bronny.
No, and he lied in that press conference and said that he did. It's bullshit.
I know. There's no way.
I ain't buying it, Sam.
You know what? You know what? You know how this ends? When J.J. Redick gets fired, the first podcast titled, I didn't want to draft Bronny. Yeah. And then J.J. Redick's right back in our good graces, and then it's just like, oh, he's back in the media.
Yeah, because they hired two ex-coaches already as his assistants, I saw, Nate McMillan and Scott Brooks. So they'll both be right there to take over once LeBron gets tired of Redick for playing Bronny or whatever. But, oh, well, at least we don't have to worry about that for a few months. That's down the road. But anyway, Sam, thanks as always for the analysis and insight. It was great talking with you. Thanks for making the arrangements to make the show today. Enjoy your weekend, and good luck to you on Saturday and at the Bucco game, and hopefully they'll get on a little winning streak for you here over the Independence Day holiday weekend.
Yeah, happy 4th to everybody. I know you'll be listening to it past the date, but don't blow your fingers off.
Yeah, right.
And go Bucks, you know?
Exactly.
Do those things and make your bets.
All right, Sam, we'll see you next week, buddy. Thanks.
Take it easy, Matt.
All right. That's Sam the Man from Upper St. Clair checking in with great analysis, as always, on all things sports and gambling related. It's Bettor's Last Stand, show number 90. That's going to do it for us this week. Have a great 4th of July weekend. As Sam said, you'll listen to this on Friday morning, maybe. But enjoy your holiday weekend. There'll be plenty of fireworks and plenty of booze and plenty of other things. And be sure and get on out there to yesbrownies.com today. 20% off your brownie house order. Use the promo code PINEROOM. Definitely going to want to try those out there. They are delicious. We will see you next week. Best of luck with your bets. Follow us on Twitter or X, whatever you prefer. BLS_PRP is where you can find it. At the Pine Room Studios for all of our other content across all the podcasting platforms, social media, and on the YouTube page that we have for the Pine Room Studios. You can also go to our website, pineroomstudios.com. Our boy Timo taking care of us there from Omni Strategic Solutions. And we're posting blogs on there starting next week. We have one up now, just a preface of what we're going to be doing. But all the guys from the Pine Room will be contributing blog posts from their various things going on in their minds and their heads and their hearts all week long. So we'll have about 3 of those out each week beginning next week. So check those out, pineroomstudios.com there for that. All right, that'll do it for us here. Show number 90 from the Pine Room Studios. We will see you next week. Best of luck on all your wagers, and have a safe and happy holiday.